The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Welcome back, friends, to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted and co-hosted by Kyle Sconewill and Robbie Earl.
Yes.
Today is a monumental day for Friends from Work, if you're just joining us, because we are talking about Captain America Civil War, which Robbie knows I love. He's known that since day one, since we met each other, since birth, I think he knew that.
Since birth.
And there's so much I have to say about this movie, so I'm just going to really quick, like, skip over pleasantries, and let's just, like, get to it. So, like, yes, I watched Joker the other night. That's on my mind, and I want to talk to you about that. Maybe we'll do a DC versus Marvel episode at some point. Also, the Oscars were last week, and that was crazy. Avengers Endgame should have won something, but I mostly agree with a lot of the awards, and blah, blah, blah. There's so much news. I'm skipping past that so we can kind of just get into Civil War. Is that fair?
That's fair. There's a lot here. So let's jump in. This is a movie that we have been working towards for so long and have been referencing maybe more than any other movie when we were talking about foreshadowing, kind of the impact it would have. So it was so fun for me to watch it.
So I broke my notes into major things versus minor things, Rob.
Right.
And my first major thing is I wrote, Robbie, comma, I love it so much. So I agree. I had fun too. So continue.
So right off the bat, this movie is directed by the Russo brothers. We love the Russo brothers. It's written by Marcus and McFeely. We love Marcus and McFeely. And our cast here is all the usual suspects, minus Mark Ruffalo and Chris Hemsworth. But we also get the MCU introduction of Chadwick Boseman as T'Challa, Tom Holland, Kyle, as Spider-Man, who's so great here, as well as the return of Paul Rudd as Ant-Man. And of course, we get a great turn from Daniel Brühl as our villain, Helmut Zemo, who I'm excited to talk about. Peter Travers of Rolling Stone, who is one of my favorite critics to follow, called this movie a, quote, near-perfect addition to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, and I just got chills.
it's hard to argue with him. Like, I've seen this movie a lot, I feel like. And in some ways, I think this is a movie that invites multiple watches more than most of them because the plot is pretty complex. Like, there's a lot going on. There are a lot of storylines being juggled, a lot of character work being done. And on this last watch, I just ate it up. I loved it.
Yes. I am, again, so thankful that the Russo brothers landed these films. They are my vibe. I love all the other directors, but this is my vibe of film.
Yep.
And I think this is the movie, more than Winter Soldier, that proved to me and to Marvel, like, they are the guys that should do the last two. Because the way they handled this cast of this size in a non-Avengers movie, to me, is flawless. I think they're incredible. I'm not going to get into it, but that's one thing I love them so much.
I think from a big picture perspective, one of my takeaways was just for a movie that has really, and we'll talk about this, just a remarkable number of action sequences.
Yes.
I think that there is a ton of really great character work and a really strong emotional core. And I feel like we say stuff like that, but this movie really does, like, what we're going to see with Wanda and Vision here, what we see with Tony and Cap, obviously, but even the start of stuff with Tony and Peter and Cap and Sharon and Bucky. It's like there's a lot of, like, any time that they have a little space, any breathing room, they really make a lot of use out of that without making it feel cluttered, which is crazy to me.
And we always give props to Marvel as a whole for that. And I'm not trying to belittle Marvel, but I think on this rewatch, I'm kind of realizing that a huge part of that is the Russo brothers to me. The other movies do an amazing job of that as well, but the way they balance those things is special, even amongst the MCU. There is so much action, and yet I feel it. I feel this movie every time they have dialogue. I feel it. Maybe that's Marcus McFeely again. I don't know, but they just do it better than others.
Yeah.
Okay, Robbie, before we kind of work linearly through the movie, and this episode might be a little long, people, so just bear with us. But it's so interesting because it's so good. Before we work through that, I understand people's concern. Let me say it this way. When they say that this movie isn't a great, like, standalone movie, I think the only person that didn't love this movie is a person who wasn't invested in the MCU, and I get that. On this rewatch, there is so much going on, and there's so much action driven by motivation that you would not understand if you haven't seen the rest of the films. So I want to say that I think almost more than any of their movies, almost, because I think even maybe in some ways Infinity War is more standalone. This movie, if you don't understand the repercussions of what we've been building to, I can see how you'd be like, wow, it's a lot of guys just kind of fighting each other.
Yeah, yeah.
But just like with all Christopher Nolan movies, the payoff, if you are invested, is so great. It's just so fulfilling if you have paid attention. In a way, the Russo brothers expect the audience to be invested.
Yeah, and I think that you're right. Like, I remember talking about this movie with a buddy of mine a few years ago, and that was his take. He thought that this movie was just action without really any meaning, and that there were no stakes because, like, obviously Cap's not going to kill Tony. So, like, what's really the point? So for him, this was part of what gave, and we might have talked about this before, this is part of what gave rise to, like, this whole rewatch idea. But I took him back through some of the films prior to Civil War that you really need to see for Civil War to work. And then he loved it. And I think that's the big thing. Like, if you're listening and you're just tuning into this episode and you haven't been part of the rewatch with us, we're glad to have you. But please go back and watch some of these other movies. Listen to the episodes. Like, listen to the saga so far. Because, like, they really are, they're taking everything that's come before very seriously and building off of that. But in a really fun way.
It comes off that Marvel and the Russo brothers are as invested into this story as we are, which obviously they are, but I love that they honor all that other stuff so much. I mean, think about how much detail they'd have to have with all the past movies to make this work, right?
Right.
It's impressive. Okay, let's start from the beginning. One of the things that struck me was such a huge part of the emotional core between Cap and Tony is Tony's family drama versus Cap's Bucky drama.
I'm actually really glad that you started there, because one of my big thoughts on this watch was the genius of making it personal for Cap and making it personal for Tony, because that's something that wasn't really present in the comic Civil War, which I should say is like an acclaimed comic. It's one of the biggest of the past few decades for Marvel. But in that, like in the comic, it was pretty much just political for both of them, except Tony kind of had this thing with Miriam Sharp that we see in the movie for a bit, where it's like, you know, he finds out about, in the comics without getting too far into it, what really spurs all of this is you have some kind of amateur heroes that are putting on this reality show where they film themselves going after villains. And anyway, there's this big accident where basically this villain ends up blowing up a pre-K or like an elementary school. And it's brutal. You know, on camera, it's this really dark thing. And the mom of one of these kids reaches out to Tony Stark and asks him to basically kind of advocate for this Superhero Registration Act. And that's how everything kind of comes to a head. And Cap, you know, takes the similar stand. And that's really like the only emotional core to it, is it's just Tony's like, I think registration's good and Cap thinks it's bad.
But with this movie, we get the personal scale from both of them.
And I think it totally changes the tone, because like, it's also like in the comics, you like Tony becomes really villainized and Cap kind of does too by the end. Like, you don't really relate to either of them because they're just both so ideologically stubborn. But here it's like, it's a total opposite. Like, you relate to both characters because you totally see both of their perspectives. And it is like, it hurts because you see what Tony's going through even before you bring his family into it, right? Like, it's personal for Tony just because of what he knows. Like, he knows that a lot of this is his fault because he's the one that created Ultron.
Like, I love that you're getting riled up. This is my favorite version of Robbie. Robbie and I have had these conversations for hours off air, and we've been waiting to say this. I can sum up the genius of this movie in 10 seconds. It's easy. It's that I totally get both sides. That's what I have chills about right now, is when you do the work, you do the history of watching these movies, you understand where Tony's coming from and you understand where Cap is coming from. So it's not as much Team Cap versus Team Tony as Robbie and I joke about. I understand why Cap is struggling. Cap would not love to trust, you know, another governmental thing. He's been let down so many times and he's never going to leave a soldier behind, right? So he cannot move on from Bucky. And I understand why Tony, who has a broken family and he comes from selling weapons and got over that, is going to be one that wants to keep things in check. And he's the one that went through the wormhole and he has nightmares about Thanos eventually. So he wants to protect while keeping his weapons in check. It makes so much sense in context. And that's the genius of the film. There is no right answer.
I think what's interesting too is Tony has this sense that, like, he's looking back on his own life and he's had to be kept in check, right? Like, he had to put himself in check in the first Iron Man. Same thing in Iron Man 2. He's like losing control. Like, it's like all along the way, there have been these moments where he like has to take account and take responsibility. And Ultron is kind of the culmination of that.
Whereas with Cap, the people putting him in check were the ones doing it wrong.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why, like, we've talked so much about, like, how these relationships have been shaping up till now. Because it is, like, I just, the way that all of this comes together so impressively, where there's nothing that you can just easily write off as right or wrong, continues to impress me.
And that's why, again, there's going to be so many little things I bring up. But to skip way to the end, every time you get to a point where you're like, oh, you know what? I'm team blank. Like, oh, I'm starting to side with Tony here. They give you something on the other side that reminds you. And like one of my favorite aspects of the whole movie is after all the drama, after all the airport fight, when Cap is flying with Bucky and you're like, yeah, Tony's taking this too far. You get this line from Bucky of all people. Bucky is the one that says, I don't know that I'm worth all this, Steve. And then, you know, it's just, and this amazing part of Steve saying back, like, all those people you killed, you didn't know what you were doing. And he says, but I still did it.
Basically, Bucky's
the one saying, like, just when you thought you were Team Cap, Bucky reminds you, like, you're taking this too far as well, Cap. And that's what I love about it. That's what's genius to me. I have chills right now thinking about it. That's why I do this podcast. Yes, that's why I do this podcast, Robbie.
No, I mean, I'm excited to get into some of those specific moments because so much of it just, like, I got chills through a lot of it, so.
Well, that's how I wanted to frame the whole podcast, is that if it's a standalone movie, I get some of your complaints. In context, it's nearly flawless. And if you do that work, you're going to appreciate it even more. And that's what happened to me when I watched this again. Okay, going back to the very beginning.
Yeah, let's just start with Siberia real quick. Because the opening shot, right before we ever get the music coming in and the title card, is you just see like the white of Siberia. And you hear that, like, that little theme for Bucky.
And like, I have so many things.
And the shots there are just beautiful. Like, it's kind of creepy. Like, you're getting a hint of the score. It's a really cool way to open up a Captain America movie. It's, like, darker than what we've seen so far. And it just kind of sets right off the bat that you don't really know, like, where things are going, which I love.
I love it so much. So then fast-forwarding to Lagos.
Right.
You know, I love Wanda so much.
Yeah.
My audience knows I love Wanda too. So I love seeing them work with her to develop those powers. Again, that linear step, you know?
And I love that Lagos feels like such an extension of Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
As well as Age of Ultron. You know, like it's like such it's taking this new vibe. Avengers team from Age of Ultron. But yeah, putting it in kind of the Winter Soldier framework, like, and giving it that kind of tone. And then it gradually grows bigger from that as the movie goes on.
I understand the critique of this movie not being really a Captain America movie. It's not. So if you wanted a solo Captain America movie, in the way we talked about the Iron Man trilogy, remember we talked about how the Iron Man trilogy got the luxury of wrapping up Iron Man? Cap didn't really get that luxury as far as his own standalone film, but that's okay. In context for me, I freaking love it. But I understand your criticism of that, people who are saying that.
And I still, like, we can talk more about it, but I actually was watching it this time around with an eye to that, and I still think that it's a really satisfactory conclusion to the arc that began in Cap 1. I mean, not in the same way that Endgame will be, but like if you want to look at it, like there's so many connecting points back to the first Avenger, you know?
Well, the beauty of these films is that the other characters can come in and out of the movie. That's the fun of this whole thing. So I love that.
Yeah, and so I love that we're getting this extension from Winter Soldier, even with Rimlo, you know, like who we saw at the very end of Winter Soldier. And then so it feels like that Cap thread, but then the way that it does pan over to Tony in that intro with Tony kind of showing the barf technology, gives us our first like real peek into his relationship with his parents, at least with his mom. And like that whole scene, I think like really is pretty important in establishing the emotional core of his storyline here, at least what'll happen later. And even just like that moment when you find out things aren't okay with him and Pepper.
Oh,
like
brutal.
That just like and his face when he sees that line. And then like all of that culminating in the conversation he has with Miriam Sharp in the hallway. That's just such
Miriam Sharp conversation is so freaking good.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
She's totally overreacting. It kills me. I understand she lost her son and that hurts, but it's not the Avengers that are killing it. Everyone keeps framing it as if like the Avengers are killing everybody.
Yeah,
guys.
But I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to push back on that because like that would be one thing if she lost her son in New York, but she lost her son in Sokovia and because of Ultron, because of Tony.
Okay, but I'm just saying that's not direct.
Yeah. I know, but I'm saying the problem...
They were there trying to save people in bathtubs of all places.
I know. But what I love about this movie is how much it deals with the fallout from Age of Ultron. And that's why I talk about Age of Ultron being so important because that is the... Like, New York is so cut and dried, right? Because, I mean, we still deal with damage from that in Homecoming and stuff, but it's like there are aliens
evil
coming in.
Evil from space, yes.
The Avengers save them. If not for the Avengers, everybody would be screwed. But Ultron is so complicated because Tony, in trying to save the world, creates this, like, you know, global catastrophe that then he saves most of the world from. But in the process, like, it's like if he had never created Ultron... Yeah, her kid would probably still be alive.
You're so right. It's so true.
And you know he's thinking that, and that's why I think he is so wrecked by that conversation.
At times, Tony then takes that and overreacts a little bit too much at times. He gets too emotional. Like the way he listens to the entire Accords pitch from Director Ross— and then and then like spins it to like his whole emotional spiel. I like what he's saying, but he's playing on their fear, and I don't like that about you, Tony. Like, you need to reel it back in. On the other side, Cap needs to communicate better. When he gets that text about Peggy dying, it would have been so much better to say, guys, I have to go because Peggy is dying, not because I have to end this conversation. It comes off like, oh, I'm out now because Tony's talking. And that doesn't help things. And if you start learning about how Bucky was controlled and about how Bucky may have murdered Tony's parents, start saying that if you're a team. Start communicating that.
Yeah.
That's where I feel like Cap is missing things, you know?
And that's fair. Although one thing that I noticed this time on both of those points is one, gosh, I love that Tony speech though. Like starting with the who's putting coffee in the disposal. Like it's just such a... It's such a good little monologue. And even the line where he's like, you know, we didn't notice because we were busy kicking ass. Like, it's just, I know it is kind of over emotional, but it's like,
Cousins hates that line. He hates Tony at that moment. He does, yeah.
See, I love that. I think that is like my favorite version of Robert Downey Jr., Tony Stark. Like, it's like so, it's hard to even describe, but it's like he's so emotional. You see almost like tears in his eyes, but he's being, like, kind of he's being aggressive almost, because it's like that's the only way he really knows to be emotional in those moments. Yes.
It's like aggressively it's like, emotional.
I know it's the same kind of thing we'll talk about later with Endgame, and you know the scene that I'm talking about.
Oh, of course I do. Of course I do.
Where it's like I'm not saying I love Tony in that moment, but I love what that moment does for Tony's character, I think.
That's, again, the beauty of it. Every comment we say is not saying that we necessarily side with said character, like Tony. It's just I understand the beauty of making the film to be that juxtaposed. Like, even me, if this were real, this is what I love about this movie, is like it feels smaller scale, if you will, in that it's not an existential threat, like we said. It's not Thanos right. attacking. But if this was real, this kind of stuff would happen. If this was a real story, you could not have rogue people going around doing things, killing people, because what right. if they did decide to do something bad that the right. like you as a culture decide that's not what we want? It makes so much sense. On the other hand, it makes so much sense why Cap would be like, but what if there's an evil attack from said country and we're all debating it? Meanwhile, people are dying.
Right.
That's the beauty of it. I get it.
And yeah, and we can get into the practicality of the Accords. I always go back and forth too. I do think it's hard because with Tony's whole story, like, and this is why I just think it's so powerful, right? Because like what we were just saying, where Cap, I think, has been better generally about just personal responsibility. Like, you know, Cap hasn't made the kind of mistakes that Tony has made. Generally, like, I'm not saying that like that makes Cap better, like just necessarily, but you know, like Tony's story, what makes it interesting is it's largely he kind of crosses a line and then fixes it sort of from the very beginning. That's like first Iron Man movie is. And so it's like, I feel like that's why, going back to that little monologue that Kyle hates, it's like, I feel like he's aware that he constantly lets his ego get away from him and he goes too far and then he has to catch himself. And it's like that moment, that like kicking ass line, or like other lines that we get later where he's kind of trying to be lighthearted, but he's also very anchored in this, is it's like Cap has never had that experience. Like Cap doesn't feel the need to be parented. And I almost feel like Tony has now like seen what he is capable of, and therefore like what the Avengers are capable of. And so it's like Tony has this perspective that I think Cap is almost incapable of having, because they have like, because it's sort of like Tony kind of assumes the worst in a lot of ways and Cap assumes the best. And that's sort of that line from the end of Age of Ultron that, again, we're going to see come back, where it's like, you know, talking about the end game and what are we going to do when that comes, and Cap's like, well, we'll do it together. It's like, it's so hard because they're just both so compelling, Kyle.
It's so compelling. Okay. Moving on.
I know. We've got to go.
I have a big picture thing about three characters, but we can table one or two of them until a little bit later, but I have to lump them all together. It just blows my mind that the Russo brothers could have this many characters and yet they find a way to have Vision fully fleshed right. out. Black Panther make the dopest, I have chills right now, intro into a movie ever. Right. And Spider-Man somehow. Oh, and then he brings in Ant-Man. And none right. of them feel out of place. They all feel perfect. No. It's like the later movies. Like, and again, let's address each character individually as we get there. But how yeah. they did that, like they're all flushed out and they're all introed in such a cool way. By the way, even like some of them having like a surprise intro, you know, like no right, idea this is right. going to happen. But let's start with Vision, because I love Vision in this movie.
Yes.
This is probably the best Vision, right, that we get.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think we said in Age of Ultron that I think Vision is consistently really well written. Like I like the way Whedon wrote him, but I really like what Marcus and McFeely do with him too, especially here. Like this, the little lines.
Best that, line in the entire movie. Our very strength invites challenge. Challenge yes, incites conflict, like, and conflict breeds catastrophe. And then when he says later, it's as I said, catastrophe. It's just yes. the guy chills right now thinking about it.
And even that moment where he looks at Cap and he says, I'm saying there might be a causality. Like it's just yes. such a...
He's literally all like wise. He's so smart.
Yep. Speaking of introducing new characters to a much lesser degree, I also love that we get General Ross in this movie. Yes. Like what a fun way to salvage a character that I never would have expected to come back. Plus William Hurt is just too great to leave on the sidelines.
He's way better in this movie.
Oh, totally. But I like, again, it's like, that's the thing with the Russo brothers and with Marcus and McFeely. Like, they are, everything matters. Like, nothing
everything
is off limits.
Everything matters. That should be their hashtag slogan. That is so true. Right. Vote Russo brothers 2020, hashtag everything matters. Yes, every detail matters. And he is great in this. It's amazing to bring him back. I hate how emotional, like, he's playing on the fear to the Avengers when he's first pitching the Accords. Like, okay, yep. Throwing in the Battle of New York, that's a cheap shot, all right? They were saving yep. your butt. Don't throw that in right. there as, like, a thing. Anyways, Vision.
Washington, too, by the way. It's not like that was Cap's fault.
Yeah, right. Vision. I, as a Team Iron Man guy, love that Vision sides on Team Iron Man. Is it just chance that the all-wise, all-knowing guy happens to side on the Accords? But then again, right when you're like, okay, so his side is right with the Accords, it makes sense, you get that little shot at the end where Vision gets distracted, and now all of a sudden you're starting to question, is Vision all-wise, right? Because he right, even is right. able to get distracted. And you get that line that Tony says, I didn't think that was possible. Vision says, neither did I. That's the genius of the movie. Okay, because well, obviously and Vision's got to be on the right side. But then even he makes right. a mistake.
Well, because even then, you're like, yeah. And the whole point is you have people like Vision and Wanda that, like, who even knows the upper limits of their power? And that's right. why it's important to not just, like, let them kind of be off doing whatever they're going to do. Like, you totally understand why there would be people, normal people, that would be like, yeah, like, I don't feel comfortable with these people just doing whatever they want all the time.
Right. Okay, two tiny Easter eggs. This is under my minor category. One,
yeah.
I love the tie-in that they say Black Widow released all the files. Do you remember that in Winter Soldier?
Yeah,
They reference that. What a genius little Easter egg. That now, that's how Zemo got his information. Which, Zemo, yes, I love Zemo. You know I love Zemo. Yep. So that's next in the film. I get to see Zemo. His intro is
which
so cool.
Which also goes back to, well, and Alexander Pierce, you know, kind of foreshadowed this, where he was like, you know, once all of this is out there, like, yes. I mean, he's talking about how her secrets are going to be out, but he also just talks about how, you know, you can't even see the consequences of that. And yeah, like, you see, it was the right thing to do, but it gave way to this really tragic event in Civil War.
Right. Okay. My next Easter egg is the Sharon Carter thing we talked about in the past. That's cool. When
yeah,
they're at the
yeah,
funeral,
yeah.
when you learn that that's her niece, that's a cool Easter egg. We don't have to get into it because we talked about it in previous mm-hmm. episode, but fun. Okay. The next major topic we come to is I love when Nat says that staying together is more important than how we stay together. Oh, I just love this. Do we compromise so that we can still be a team?
I think that Natasha has the most interesting storyline in this
we
movie.
We talked about this.
Ways.
So she's friends with Tony and Cap.
Yeah, and she can cut through to Tony in a way that no one else really can,
yep,
but also
true.
With Cap. And like, a scene that I don't think I really ever noticed before.
And she's like, still figuring it out too.
Right. It's like this split second thing when they're first talking about the Accords at the compound and whenever Natasha says something in favor of the Accords and, you know, Tony has the whole thing like, oh my gosh, you just agree with me? Like, I can't believe it.
Can't retract it.
And you see Cap look up kind of surprised and he has this look that he gives Natasha that's like, he's almost feeling betrayed, but it's like he
knows
that's not
fair. But then this is what makes
fair.
Natasha is that she has this line where she says, I'm just playing the cards I was dealt. Like, I'm reading the room.
Yeah.
That's the genius. Yeah. That's what Natasha does better than anybody is just reading the room and changing. Whereas Tony and Cap are so fixated. You know what I mean?
But you also love that she shows up at the funeral. Like, I mean, the line that you're talking about and that, like, I just didn't want you to be alone. Like, just reinforcing that they have a special kind of relationship that I love. And again, like, apparently there's this online Marvel movie community that really wishes that Steve and Natasha had wound up together.
Yeah, I bet.
And I could not disagree more because I love just this friendship that they have. Like, I just think it's really great. Like, I like that it doesn't have to be romantic at all for them to have this really intimate thing. And I think it's one of the more powerful relationships in the franchise.
For sure.
And that funeral scene is so great.
It's so good. She has such a unique role in these movies. I've said this in previous episodes. I cannot wait to watch Black Panther again because I've seen it only a few times and I ranked it fairly high, but I'm fully already anticipating moving it way up in my head.
Yeah.
And part of that is because I have just fallen in love for some reason with T'Challa and Black Panther. Yeah. And it's not just his movie, though. That's my thing, is I've fallen in love with him as a character and how he interacts with everybody else. But
yeah,
how they weave that in is just genius to me. And to bring him in this movie feels so natural. And there's this,
yeah,
like when his dad dies, the acting of that scene is brutal and so good. I mean, it's not just good, it's like excellent how they bring him in. And the first time he shows up in the suit and he's like kicking people all over the place is so cool to me.
Both introductions of T'Challa as a character and then of Black Panther once he's in the suit, I think are great. And again,
and like, T'Chaka, by the way, his dad being there.
And T'Chaka. Well, and that's what I was going to say. Like, what I love about Vienna is, again, like the way that Civil War continually proceeds from Age of Ultron, like not just Sokovia, but also going back to like the Hulk attack, like stuff where it's like everything matters. And it's just
hashtag everything
matters. We talked about in Age of Ultron how we got those shout outs to Wakanda and Vibranium, and we get the line from King T'Chaka about how, you know, Wakandan Vibranium was used to make a terror weapon. And it's like, yeah, it all does make so much sense that all these little moments that they've been throwing in, none of it's wasted.
Now, T'Challa also gets some of the best dialogue in the film, I think. His conversations with Nat about the politics, his conversations with his dad, his conversations with Nat outside after the explosion, how he's going to kill people, and then his conversations later in the film that we'll get to in a little bit, but just his dialogue, I love.
Yeah, no, it's like he's written like such a badass. Like, he's just a cool character.
He is.
Like, there's
but he
a
doesn't
moment
play
where,
it too cool for school. It's so weird. It's like he's so cool, yeah, but it doesn't turn me off that you're like threatening my other Avengers. Like, he fits.
Like, I love the line, and this is another one that I think I had kind of brushed over before, but later on in the airport scene when Clint's like, hey, I don't think we've met, I'm Clint. And he's like, I don't care.
Yeah, I know. It's so good. It's so good.
It's like he's cool.
Yes.
Yeah, and speaking of the introduction of Black Panther, the whole Bucky breakout of the apartment, like, bike chase scene is just one of the coolest action sequences ever. Ugh, like, the choreography.
Their action directing is so good. Yes, the choreography. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Like, seeing, like, the especially the stuff in the stairwell with Bucky and Cap, just, like, the way that that looks is so cool. It's
and
very
when,
Winter Soldier.
When Cap catches a guy and gives Bucky a look, like, stop, you would have killed them.
Right. And then, yeah, like, whenever Black Panther shows up the first time and the whole thing in the tunnel and Falcon and War Machine, like, it's just it's a really cool scene.
It's so good. Okay, gotta keep us moving along. A tiny tidbit I have to say is, it's so small, it has nothing to do with the movie, but I never caught it before. You remember when Nat's on the phone calling Steve after the Vienna has just been bombed? And she says, stay out of this, you'll only make things worse.
Yeah.
And then an ambulance goes by. I never caught that. Did you catch that? The ambulance goes by, and then
she
hears the ambulance through the phone, and that's how she looks up like, oh, he's here. And that's when she says, stay out of this, please. But I never caught that. That's how she catches it.
Oh, I didn't catch that either. That is
interesting. Because you hear like, woo, and then you hear through the phone, woo, in a second. So he's right, like down the street, which I thought was
cool.
Genius. I never noticed that. Again, such a small thing. Okay, this is a little off subject. It's not linear, but I saw this interview with Robert Downey Jr. talking about his relationship with Chris Evans that made me so happy. He used the word, he said, I adore Chris Evans. And he says how much he loved him and how much he enjoyed working with him. But the thing that stood out to me was he specifically points out of everything he's done in his career that his interaction with Chris Evans in Civil War is like what stands out to him. I just love that. And I feel
I
it.
I do love that.
I feel it too.
Yeah, definitely. And it's part of what will make Endgame hit so well. I was going to say, before we move on to Spider-Man, who I would love to talk about in a second.
We're not there yet.
just if we're talking, you know, we talked about the introduction of Black Panther. After that, you know, Cap and Sam and T'Challa wind up in custody. And we have the whole psych eval moment. But, like, that breakout scene with Bucky, where he's back under mind control. Like, it's cool because in those, you know, towards the end of Winter Soldier, you see him kind of break out of that. And then the start here, you know, you saw the fight scene in the staircase where he's kind of, himself, and so he can make decisions and he's using non-lethal force. But you forget almost how kind of terrifying he is when he's like fully in that moment. But it's like when you see him fighting Natasha and Tony, and like that moment where Tony's terrified because he like almost shoots him in the face. Like, it's just this like, again, the choreography is perfect, but also it's just he's a scary villain.
Bucky's a terrifying villain, and I love him. Here is what, you know, this is maybe my favorite Bucky movie. Okay, now we can get there. My next point is all caps, underlined, chills AF for Spider-Man when he shows up.
Yes.
The introduction to him,
in all caps.
The introduction to Aunt May being Aunt Hottie is so fun. It's funny. Again, talking about, well, we're not going to get into this, but talking about Joker the other day, it's like they just find a way to mix action with emotion and then still give us some glimpses of humor that make it so good. That's what makes Marvel better than everybody else.
Yeah.
Like that, this, having Aunt May be hot is funny.
Oh, yeah. And this is one of those moments where there is so much talk about how the MCU would introduce Spider-Man. And like, we're coming off of the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies not that long before this. And then obviously the Tobey Maguire ones before that. So it was like, do we even need another Spider-Man? Like, is this going to be redundant? And so I just like, I think it's one of those things, again, where this could have been a big flop and it works so well. And
better
that
than
whole
we ever could have imagined.
Scene, like, even just down to the fact that Peter says, with great power comes great responsibility, without having to say, with great power comes great responsibility. Like, just that like, when bad things happen and I can do what I do and I don't. It's like, and Tony's kind of understanding and like the way you see Tony respecting him and like their bond. And one thing I wanted to point out that I think is crazy, apparently Robert Downey Jr. and Tom Holland both are known as kind of some of the better improv actors within the MCU. And this scene, the bulk of like the bedroom scene where they're having that conversation, was improvised apparently. Which I, again, like, always love. And you can, it's like they just have this chemistry. And I think that's, you know, why we see that relationship become so much more meaningful through the rest of these films, is because you can just tell it works. But like, one example that I love, you know how Peter's sitting on his bed and he's kind of telling him his reason for doing all of it. And Tony gets up and he's like, you move the leg and I'm going to sit right there.
Yes.
Apparently, like, that was scripted. Like, he was supposed to sit down next to him. And Tom Holland was actually, he had his leg where Tony was supposed to be sitting, where Robert Downey Jr. was supposed to be sitting. So just in character, Robert Downey Jr. was like, hey, you just move your leg, I'm going to sit
here.
Because
that's going to bring up the hug joke in Homecoming. And that's like the, when he shoots the web on his hand on the door, get this off me, come on.
Right.
Like, what are you doing? All that stuff.
I just love, we'll get into more of like the cool improv moments like that later. But mostly like this whole scene is just, from the get-go, the relationship there is so great and just so one good. Of my favorite things.
Okay, deep breath. I've been shouting at our audience for 40 minutes, I just realized. I am literally losing my voice already. Okay. So I'm going to stay more calm for this next bit. I agree. Spider-Man is such a fascinating case because we had those five previous Spider-Mans. And I remember watching those previous Spider-Mans. And I remember that everybody in the world knows the story of Uncle Ben dying and Spider-Man being bit by a spider. And I remember being so hesitant of like, if Spider-Man's going to come along in this universe, like, oh, are we going to have Spider-Man fatigue? Is it going to be another reboot? Are we going to hear another origin thing? And we'll talk about that more in Homecoming. But they just made some decisions that, like you said, could have flopped and worked so well to make this version of Spider-Man younger feeling, and he's in actual high school. Whereas like the Tobey Maguire version, he's like 30 pretending to be in college or whatever. I don't know.
But
the younger version, the like slightly goofier version, to have Iron Man basically be his mentor instead of Uncle Ben, like instead of referencing it a lot. Like,
which again, a lot of people hate.
Well, there's little shout outs to Uncle Ben. I don't know if you caught this before.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, just something new and fresh in a time when we didn't need another reboot. That's my point.
Right.
We want these stories to evolve, right? And so what they did was just genius. And then I love, we'll get this later, but when he's fighting in the airport, you get the one-liner Spider-Man, right? Like, he's making jokes the whole time he's fighting, and they even joke about like, there's not normally this much talking, and that's so fun. If you're a Spider-Man fan, that's so fun.
And you know, we'll have to talk about this as we watch the Spider-Man films, because I need to watch them with an eye to this, but I know some of the complaints around specifically Far From Home from Spider-Man fans was that he wasn't funny or quippy enough in that movie. And whether or not that's true, he
Who
definitely is. Right? He's so well written in Civil War. Like, without even talking about, because I think John Watts, like, those movies are fantastic, but he is, like, it's perfect Spider-Man writing here. Like, they introduce him just in the slam dunk of a way, and it's like, it's funny, but it's geeky, and it's exactly like what you would want this high school kind of learning how to be a superhero kid to be whenever he's around, like, Iron Man and Captain America. Like, I love the scene that we get between him and Cap. I love, like, everything that they, all of the parameters that they lay out for Spider-Man here, I think, serve us so well moving forward, and did John Watts such a favor in what he was able to do in his solo movies.
And again, I just want to encourage people that, like we've said multiple times in the past, like, you have the comics already. So if that's your version of Spider-Man, that's okay. Love that. But if you get things, don't necessarily 100% be opposed to them just because you're already set in your ways. You know what I mean? With books, this happens with Harry Potter, with Lord of the Rings, all this stuff. But I love this version. Okay, this might be a slight backtrack. It's happening about the same time as what we're talking about. But when Tony is talking to Cap in the glass room with the pens, trying to get him to sign the Accords, there's some amazing dialogue in there. And I love this idea that you see Tony's frustration with all of his sighs, you know, his like, but he is a little bit actually opening up. Tony says, like, I know I can't quit. It's my fault. Like, so every time I choose a side, there's little moments I'm going to keep showing you throughout this whole podcast where I go, well, now Tony's actually, he is opening up. Like, hear him out on this. He's showing some vulnerability. And then even the dialogue with, oh, she's stuck in a house with an Olympic-sized lap pool or whatever the line is. But
there's just a screening room.
Yes, there's a screening room.
Yeah. That's one of those moments where I get frustrated with Cap there because I think Tony's totally right in that moment. Like,
and Tony gets excited saying, like, we can amend it. We can change it. He's like, oh, you're doing it. Good.
And it's like, I just don't. To me, it is entirely reasonable. Like, what he's saying is, it's like, she's not a U.S. citizen. She's super young. The whole world knows that she's, you know, from what they can tell, responsible for these deaths
she's
in Lagos.
She's crazy powerful.
And it's like, yeah, like, just keep her. It's not like she's, like, locked up or chained to a wall. Like, keep her confined while all of this, like, hoopla dies down. And then kind of, like, exactly what he's saying. Like, we'll kind of work from there and have her instated onto the team, and then all this will go away. And the fact that Cap just dismisses it out of hand always frustrates
me. And he escalates it for him. Like, that makes him so mad all of a sudden. He was about to sign, you know?
And I guess it's just because, again, like, going back to Cap being distrustful of anyone that he thinks is hiding the ball. And I guess maybe it's not so much that Tony's keeping Wanda locked up as that he, you know, was doing that and hadn't told Cap or whatever. Like, but it's just that never seems super satisfactory to me. I don't think it's a weakness of the movie. I think you're just, you know, both of these characters are flawed. And I think
this is my favorite part of Robbie. Like, my favorite part about Robbie is that if for 1 second while you were speaking, I was thinking to myself, oh my gosh, he's finally giving some concessions on Cap maybe being in the wrong at a time. And so I chimed in. I was like, yes, I love that you're saying that. And then you instantly flipped it back to, like, well, but I see why he's this and this. Look, you cannot do it. You cannot say something negative about it. Just say, not the movie's negative, but say Cap might be wrong there. That's okay. That's what I'm saying. Both sides are wrong and right. But your gut is to defend it.
I know this is, if there were a moment where I would say Cap is wrong, it would be here, just because it's like, at least hear Tony out. But the way that he just kind of, you know, I don't want to break up the set and walks out of the room. To me, it is Cap kind of being a hothead, which is normally Tony's thing, you know, but it's like Cap just, I think you're right. It's a failure to communicate and to really be willing to listen and to meet in the middle. And I think part of that is maybe an extension of what we saw from Cap in Winter Soldier, like towards the end when we talked about how he kind of comes into his own and has this, like, you know what, I'm not going to be in the back seat anymore. Like, I know what's best and I'm going to do what's best. And I think now we've kind of seen that harden into this, like, you know, it's that speech that we see at the funeral where it's like, yeah, if you think something's right, don't compromise, even if everyone's telling you that it's wrong. Right. Like, if you know it's right. And personally, I'm not sure that's so sad
when I hear that speech, because I'm like, no, don't tell him that now. He's about to change his mind.
And I think that in the moment, that's, by the way, that comes from a John Straczynski Civil War comic where Cap says that to Spider-Man. And it's one of my favorite.
That's kind amazing.
It's one of my favorite comic issues. It's this really kind of moving speech. But at the same time, like, as much as I think it's like a moving speech, I'm also like, that's not necessarily great advice, though.
Because, like, never compromise ever.
Right. Like, because everyone thinks they're right. And so if you just decide that you're going to dig in and not move no matter what, like, that's not a great place to be sometimes.
It's maybe bad political commentary.
Right.
Okay, three other minor things really fast. I literally wrote, I love Nat in this movie, which we talked about. So I just thought you would enjoy that I did have that written down. Specifically, Nat I love in this movie. The second minor thing is I love this little shout out they give to Nat and Bruce Banner's relationship when director Ross says, tell me, do you know where Banner is right now? And then instantly Steve looks at Nat and she kind of puts her head down, like acknowledging that relationship. Thank you. Again, more Ultron work. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Then I'm turning the page to the next kind of major thing, which is we talked about Vision already. Then we talked about Black Panther's introduction, then Spider-Man's introduction. And then I just lastly have to tie it up by saying the intro to Ant-Man in this movie, how they work him in, is so fun.
Yeah.
To see Paul Rudd be like in the Ant-Man vibe, the jokey, thanks for thinking of me. And I'm shaking your hand too long. And you're great too. And I know you. Hey. And all that stuff is so fun.
All right, Arrow guy.
Yeah, exactly. And again, they don't see Ant-Man as like some all-powerful weapon, and they don't treat him that way. So how he fits in, kind of like just helping, is great. I love the idea that they had to go recruit a team, so they go get Ant-Man, and he goes and gets Spider-Man, and how we have that background on getting Ant-Man from Ant-Man the film. So fun.
Yeah. One thing that we've talked about really early on, but I think plays out here, we've had all these characters that are supposed to be kind of funny in their own ways in their movies. And I think when you put them all together, it, I would imagine, is really hard from a writing standpoint to ensure that you give each of these kind of like witty, funny superheroes their unique voice. But they totally do. And I think like you see that nowhere more so than like in that airport battle when you have Ant-Man making jokes and Spider-Man making jokes and Natasha and Clint and Tony and Rhodey, and everyone still is very much true to their own kind of style of humor and like the character that we've seen emerge from their own solo films and past Avengers films. Like I think that the way Ant-Man and Spider-Man fit into that especially is really great.
So great. Now, let's get to the epic conclusion of this movie, the airport scene and then the final stuff and the floating raft and all that. Okay.
Yep.
Let's sit with this airport scene for a second. One line I wrote down that I hate that Cap says is Tony says, this is how he does it. He goes, I'm trying to keep, and then he kind of calms himself and says, I'm trying to keep the Avengers from falling apart. And then Cap says, you did that when you signed. I wrote down, that is not true. He did not tear the Avengers apart by signing it, Cap. Like, reel it back there, dude. Then again, where the movie is so beautiful is right when I feel that. On the other hand, Cap finally is trying to communicate about Bucky and the other Winter Soldiers and all this stuff. And Tony now won't listen. He says, and you've been an idiot. Again, now I'm kind of like, okay, now Tony, you calm down. Let's get back to Team Cap. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you're right. I see where Cap's coming from again. But it's, at the same time, he can't say, well, you know, because I believe in this thing, it's all of you guys that have signed that betrayed, when it's like, you know, it can't just be him that makes the decisions for everybody else. Like,
Here goes Robbie defending Captain America.
No, I'm saying that I think Cap trusts his own moral compass so much, and I think sometimes he has to recognize it goes back to what we've talked about, where Cap is never willing to compromise, and Tony, I think, is sometimes too willing to compromise. And I think in this situation, Cap's unwillingness to move at all keeps him from, it does kind of tear the Avengers apart. So I'm going to put that on Cap.
Oh, it's a miracle, ladies and gentlemen, twice in one episode. We kind of need to just sit in this next 30 minutes for a second. I have a fun fan question. I wrote this down.
Yeah.
Whose side do you think would actually win if they were all trying to kill each other? Just think about that for a little bit and then get back to me later. If they were actually all trying to kill each other to the death, who do you think would win? You know me, I love my powers. I was like, on one hand, you got Vision, you know, they kind of all have their equal counterpart on each side. I think they split the sides up very, purposefully, you know? So like when they clash and they all hit like their significant other, if you will, it's like, it makes sense who's fighting who. But I was wondering like, you got Wanda. Wanda could probably do some damage, even to Vision. We've seen that.
Like you've got to think if they were actually trying to hurt each other.
That's what I'm saying. If they wanted to kill each other, who would win? Whose side? So
yeah, that's a great question.
And it's very purposeful, I think, because the two people that aren't there, by the way, would be the two counterparts fighting each other, right? Like Bruce and Thor would be the only two that kind of match in that way.
Right.
So again, think about that, Robbie. Get back to me later. Fans, get back to me later. Which side would actually win if they did fight?
I kind of think Team Tony, but we'll talk about it more later.
Okay. Let's get into that later. Ooh, that's going to be a Marvelettes brewing right there is what I think. Okay. So we come to my first real complaint with the film.
Whoa.
I think the movie would be 100%. For a long time, this movie was my number one, Robbie, personally.
Right.
And I think I would still have it as my number one, if not for something I can't get out of my head ever since we started this podcast in September.
I know what you're about to say.
Rhodey should have died. And I can't get it out of my head. Because in some ways, I still fully believe in the stakes that... Okay, when they first start fighting... I personally enjoy that obviously they're not fighting to kill each other. They don't want to kill each other.
Right.
How you actually portray that, I think they did an amazing job. If they actually were trying to kill each other, I would buy it less. Because I'd be like, what?
Right.
They're going to like literally end the other person's life over this disagreement.
Right.
That would be too far-fetched. So how they start it is perfect. Then how the fight escalates. By the way, the action is amazing to watch.
It's so
fun to see it
all
happen.
It's
so
scene.
Fun. I mean, watching Spider-Man like rope up Bucky and Falcon, which by the way, shout out to the Disney Plus show, was so fun. And those lines and the dialogues and the joke they get there, just again, keep it lighthearted enough, despite the movie being very serious in tone. How it escalates is perfect to me because what ends up happening is it keeps getting more and more and more aggressive to where eventually they kind of shoot Falcon to disable him. But when it hits Rhodey with Vision, I just can't get out of my head the potential and the possibilities of how impactful that could have been had he actually died there. Think about that. It would have gone from like a joke fight to, oh my gosh, like this would drive Tony to actually want to kill Cap in that last fight.
So this is something I'm with you.
And I also want to say, Robbie, that doesn't mean that the stakes aren't quote unquote high enough. We've had this conversation before.
Right.
I think you just feel the stakes later on. And you've said that to me. I'm not going to spoil anything, but really Infinity War is the movie where it hits you the damage that Civil War did.
Right.
But if you just watch Civil War as a standalone movie again, I'm wondering, like, I understand the criticism of, are the stakes really real if they don't want to kill each other? And I think the perfect solution was to kill Rhodey.
So I'm torn on this because I've always been on that side, and this is something else I was kind of watching for on this last rewatch because of all the reasons you just said. So I'm not going to necessarily argue against you. However, I was thinking.
I also love Rhodey, by the way. Obviously,
right. One, I do think in Infinity War, but especially there's a scene in Endgame that I don't want to get into right now, but where we do see kind of the consequences of this for Rhodey. It's just like a brief moment when we see, you know, like Rhodey looking kind of helpless and paralyzed in a way that, you know, again, just adds a little bit of impact to what happened here. But part of what takes away the impact in all the other scenes is that he has these things that allow him to walk, you know, that we've talked about before, where Tony kind of negates a lot of like the emotional impact. It's not like we see Rhodey in a wheelchair normally or anything like that.
Okay, pause. I feel the emotional impact still in this movie, like a 9 out of 10. I'm making an argument just to get that last 10%. I'm saying it's almost there, You know what I'm saying? It's not that I'm saying it's totally devoid of impact.
Right. The only reason I would push back against saying that Rhodey should have died after this latest watch is if they had gone all the way with it, like what you just said, it would have made Tony lose it, which means there's no way. I mean, he wouldn't have seen reason after that. There's no way he would have gone to see Cap, like wanting to help Cap fight Zemo, because it would have never made amends at all. Yeah.
Period.
So it would have been. And then there's a part of me that's like, okay, there's so much going on in this movie that I almost, because I have to think that they thought about that. They thought about killing Rhodey off.
But 100%, because they had to write up that he was paralyzed. So they were thinking, what's the highest consequences we can do without killing him? I'm sure is the conversation.
And so I had always thought, oh, well, they were just afraid to lose the character. I'm not so sure that that's the only thing that's going into this calculus, because the more I think about it, if they had killed Rhodey, I kind of think it would have been like a black hole that sucked in the rest of the plot. Like, it's like that's such a big thing that I think one of two things would have happened. One, it would have taken the focus so much off of what was going on with Cap and Bucky that it would have made the movie feel like off kilter, and it would have just further complicated and like muddied up a movie that's like already got a lot of work to do. Or two, they would have handled it roughly the same way they do, except instead of Rhodey getting paralyzed, he dies, in which case, if Tony just proceeded the way that he does in the film, it would have been not nearly emotional enough.
It would have
enough.
Lessened Rhodey's death.
Yeah,
and you would have been like, why is he not panicking about
exactly.
that?
Exactly, yeah, and we would have said kind of what we said in Iron Man 3, where we're like, why is Tony just back to being like jokey? Like, this should have been a moment where he's like really impacted. So I'll
push back again and say, well, that's all fair, except that there's probably a way to do it both ways. Like, maybe the movie didn't have to end in that exact way. There would have been a way to write it where he died and Tony eventually got over it enough to interact with Cap. Because keep in mind, he doesn't see Cap again until Endgame.
Yeah, so you're saying he just wouldn't have had the final moment Siberia?
Maybe. I'm just saying there you could have written it in a different way. I get what you're saying, and I think I agree with you. I want the stakes to be felt.
Yeah.
Without messing up the movie.
I just
wonder if they could have done that enough by writing the very end post Rhodey dying a little bit differently, but still salvaged enough of a relationship that Tony and Cap could eventually see each other again in Endgame. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right. Well, and I'm almost wondering if a happy, because what I like about the way it's written currently is it's not so much as something, I mean, I do love, again, like I love that like aggressive, emotional Robert Downey Jr. And so that moment when Sam's like, I'm sorry,
he
just blasts him. Like, but after that, what happens to Rhodey is less something that makes Tony angry, and I think more a moment where he's like, okay, wow, this is getting really out of hand, and he like steps back.
That is the beauty of the scene, because before that, the fight, I think even the characters are feeling the way we feel as an audience.
Right.
Right? Like, that is kind of a joke. Not a joke,
but like, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's not a joke. Sorry. I don't say joke is in a bad way. I just mean that it's lighthearted. We're not going to really kill each other.
Right.
And I think in that moment, you're right. Tony's like, this is getting out of control. He's realizing this is not good.
Whereas if Rhodey had died, it would have been a catastrophe, but in like such a larger way that we would have had to have like really sat in it for a while, which maybe would have been good. But again, I just think would have kind of thrown off the balance of the movie. And I guess what I'm wondering is if like as a happy medium, this is going to sound like, I don't know. I think that Rhodey, part of what makes it not as impactful is that he still is going to serve as War Machine moving forward. Like, it's like he still continues to operate functionally the same
like
way.
What if he couldn't walk anymore and just couldn't get in the suit?
That's my thing. Like, I think that this should have at least like taken Rhodey off the board, because again, like, I love Don Cheadle. I love the character. I don't think that Rhodey adds anything like that's indispensable to the rest of the Infinity Saga.
Yeah, or like what you're saying though is, could he still be in the headquarters, just not actually fighting? Like, he could be there.
Oh yeah,
you know,
no, totally.
His
yeah, that's,
still,
and that's a
and
great point.
That.
Yeah, we could still have the same character, but just we don't have War Machine anymore. And I think that would have like to have actually, because then you're still kind of, it's the death of an Avenger in a sense.
War Machine. Yeah.
Even though it's not the death of Rhodey. So yeah, I think
but
that's
Colonel Rhodes is still alive. Yeah.
Or if even, you know, we had just seen like the development of these things that Tony has to help Rhodey walk, like in Infinity War instead of right after the fact in Civil War. I think just again, like talking about sitting in the impact of things, like it feels like, you know, you have this, oh man, Rhodey's paralyzed, and then like next up he's already kind of learning to walk again. It feels like I wish we could have sat in whatever impact that has a bit longer.
I will say again, that's the beauty, to be honest, of hearing this from you right now, is that you've never said that to me before, and I'm sitting here processing, and that's a fair point. I've always wanted the death. I don't necessarily know how they would have pulled it off. And I wonder, that actually makes me feel a little bit better. Like, I wonder if the compromise wasn't a death, but was a full paralysis, if I'd feel even better about it.
Right. Because that's what they're setting up, you know? Like, and that's why the scene's so emotional initially. And that's actually, we can talk about this more in a second, but that's a problem I have in some ways with have had maybe more in the past with the ending of this movie in general, is I sometimes wonder if it ends like a hair too positively.
Yeah, the very end. Yeah,
just because, and I think that we can help to negate that with our rewatch order, not putting too much power in our hands. But I think that's part of why I really do like it this way, is I think that it makes it feel like what you were just saying, that impact does happen. It's just after the fact. But I think that movie just on its own.
Well, it's funny to me because, again, if you were watching this movie as a standalone movie, all the problems I said earlier still would apply, but I feel like it would end perfectly. You need some kind of resolution.
True.
What you're almost arguing is like, in context, we get all the amazingness of the tragedy of this, but in context, yeah, they could have ended the very end on like a sour note, aka Rocket with a tear on his face,
right,
from Guardians 2.
Right.
They could have ended on that note to really make us feel for a couple years.
Yeah,
that this was devastating.
I mean, or like to have ended it. Can you imagine if it had ended just with Tony lying on the floor with his arc reactor broken, watching Cap walk away, and the shields laying next to him?
That would be so savage, dude. Like, but yes, I guess you're right. That'd be cool, but it'd be so savage.
It's just like, but like to
you should
really
just tell our
leave,
listeners to turn it off right there.
Right. Just to leave in your mind, like, this is the state of things. Because it is. Like, next time those characters see each other, that kind of is where they're still at, more or less. But like,
okay, what you're kind of getting at for our listeners is that there's all these ramifications, but then we get to see Rhodey learning to walk.
Right.
We see Cap break all the prisoners out of the raft. And we see Tony get a phone and a letter from Cap to where he can call him.
Right.
So it's kind of like, wait, what? You separated for 2.5 hours, and then in the last 5 minutes, all of a sudden, it seems like things are better.
Right.
I have never felt that as much as you do, because I kind of like the way, I don't love the tone maybe, but I do love the jokes that he makes about the light flashing and I put you on hold.
Right.
And all that stuff. But I think you're right about the tone. So take that for what you will.
But I'll also say that, again, on this rewatch, kind of paying special attention to that, it works better than I thought it did. I would maybe like, again, to kind of sit in the darkness of what's happened a bit more, but like there are moments I haven't always caught, like whenever Tony pulls up to the Avengers headquarters and he kind of looks at the Avengers symbol for a second.
Oh my gosh, I wrote that down. I wrote that down, that he looks up at the A and he's depressed.
Yeah, like, and that hit me in a way that it hasn't before. And that's what I mean. Like, there are a lot of little moments in this movie that I just don't think I've truly caught before that communicate a lot, like a lot of face acting that I think does some work, even if it's not a line.
Okay. Listeners, thank you so much for listening. And just, I hope you're enjoying this as much as I truly am. I have a passion that's burning in my heart for this movie and for the MCU. Okay. I have two tiny minor things and I'm flipping the page to my last page.
Okay.
So we're almost there. My two minor things. I never saw my whole life watching this movie a million times. I never caught that when they come up to Vision in the headquarters, he's sleeping. Have you seen this? And for 1 second, he's sleeping in the corner, standing up and like powered down. He kind of looks like dark. Like his,
no
I
way.
Mean, the color of his skin is literally dark. Bro, I never caught this. It's when Clint's going to show up and he's going to get Wanda out.
Right.
and there's an explosion, and Vision wakes up and goes outside to check on the explosion and says, stay here, to Wanda.
Right.
Watch that scene again. For 1 second, Vision is sleeping in the corner, like powered down, but he's floating, standing up, and it's so cool.
I've never noticed that.
I know, dude, just go look it up. I've never noticed it till this time, and I was like, that's a cool way to visualize him, like, powered down, quote unquote. And then two other tiny minor things, okay?
Right.
I love the line of, can you move your seat up?
Yes.
From Winter Soldier. Such a good comedy bit. And then I love when Winter Soldier and Falcon are running away from Spider-Man. He goes, what is that? Everyone's got a gimmick now. And I wrote down, you have the gimmick, Falcon. You're the gimmick. He's actually bit by a spider. That's why it makes sense. You are the actual gimmick flying around with your wings. Don't put down Spider-Man, okay? You are the gimmick. Golly. What a dumb thing for Falcon to say, you idiot. Okay. Then
bird costume.
I love the Spider-Man one lines like we talked about. When Black Panther catches both of Clint's arrows and they blow up in his hands.
That's such a cool moment.
And that's what he says. That was so cool. Like you said, they just make him badass in every way. Like, let's make him badass. Like, catch these and just hold the explosion. Okay, now I'm turning the page to my last 20 minutes. And I wrote down, for me personally, I think the ending 20 minutes of this film is maybe my favorite MCU stuff ever.
Wow.
I think I can pinpoint it too. From the moment that Tony realizes he might be wrong and he does the helicopter suit up out of the back of the helicopter his finger. So cool to see his technology advance. Then when he flies over to see Cap, when they showed that visual of Tony shooting Cap's shield in the trailer, I didn't anticipate that fight, like the precursor of that fight being this, and that's what I loved. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I thought, okay, that's going to be like in the airport scene at like the pinnacle of their disagreement or whatever. But what actually precedes it is Tony comes, admits he's wrong, which is amazing.
Right.
Again, I just got my line about Bucky saying, I don't know if I'm worth it. So I'm like, I'm Team Iron Man. Then Tony comes back and admits he's wrong. Now I'm like, okay, Cap's kind of got a point. Then the twist to me of Zemo killing the other soldiers.
Yeah.
I love so much. Then the visual of them watching the film. And I wrote down, this might be my favorite acting that Robert Downey Jr. ever does when he says, did you know? Don't bullshit me, Roger. Did you know? When he says that, I'm as in as I've ever been for the MCU ever.
And again, the face acting there, like so much of what makes Robert Downey Jr. a legend.
Yes, he kind of looks up at him. Yes. And Cap almost kind of like touches him for a second. He's like, don't freak out.
You know? And it's that like watery eyed look that he has that's so good. And one thing that I...
But to tie it all in, that we started the movie with problems with Tony's family. And to be honest, we've started the entire MCU with problems with Tony's family in Iron Man 1.
Right.
And now Tony finally, I have chills thinking about this, has gotten like some reconciliation with his parents, a little bit in his heart.
Right.
And then after he's finally healing from that, this movie is supposed to be about these accords and all this stuff. And that's what the whole disagreement is about. But really at the heart of it, at the very end, it comes down to you poke the bear of Tony's family and that emotional soft spot is just genius. Like we said, they made it personal. And that moment when it comes to him and he says, I don't care anymore about any of the other stuff.
Right.
I'm killing you because you killed my mom kind of thing. I just think that's the genius of the movie.
Well, and so what's funny from Team Cap side over here, I think you're talking about how this all has roots back in the first Iron Man, but going all the way back to Cap 1, there's this little moment when they're watching the video where Howard recognizes Bucky. You know, you hear him say Sergeant Barnes right before he kills him.
Yes.
And that is heartbreaking to me because it's easy to forget the history that those characters have. Like, it reminds you that Civil War really is the conclusion to the story that began in Cap 1 when Howard Stark and Bucky were fighting the Nazis together with Cap in 1945. And so it's like for Howard in the moment before he dies to realize that it's this old compatriot of his that he thought was gone that is then about to murder him. And then something I don't think I've ever noticed before, but I think, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but I think we see the slightest bit of recognition on Bucky's face too. Like, not enough to break his programming there, but enough to cause him some pain. And that's what just makes that scene so emotional to me, because it's like the same way that Bucky, like later on, whenever he sees Steve and Winter Soldier, like kind of starts to come out of it where they have to reprogram him. I feel like you get a little baby bit of that where it's like he kind of knows what he's doing in that moment, but it's like he can't not do it. And it's just, right. Oh, it's so then, intense.
Well, then as a side note, not only am I getting all of that, like while I'm getting that emotional core just drained from me, I also get some of the coolest visuals I've ever gotten ever in any movie ever. When they're fighting, the three of them, for yeah. some reason, the way they shot that slow-mo of the them two together, I just have so much going through my mind at that moment of how cool this looks and how much history has been leading up to this point. And it all just kind of hits me in those 20 minutes, and I feel it almost more than I ever feel anything in the MCU.
That one shot when Iron Man's in the middle and Bucky and Cap are on either side of him looks so cool.
It does look so cool. And I mean, I get why at that point, like you're kind of like, okay, up until that point in the movie, you're kind of like team Iron Man or your team Cap or whatever. Right. Right. When that moment hits, I feel like the genius of the movie is, I feel like that just kind of goes away. And in that moment, you're just sad.
Yeah.
You partner that with the music that they're playing, which is a genius theme that's just so sad. Yeah. And it's just so sad. And it also just hits you like the chords, all that stuff, whose side you're on doesn't matter.
Right.
A, Tony is overreacting, but you just, your heart just tears for him. And Cap is defending, but your heart tears for him.
Right.
It's just like, at this point, it's so sad it led to this. And that's the genius of it to me.
Which perfectly segues into kind of T'Challa's realization as he sneaks up on right. Zemo.
And I never caught that before, that he like kind of spies on him a little bit, like sees them doing that.
Right.
I think I said this earlier, but two of my favorite lines ever, which is, vengeance is consuming them, it's consumed you, and I'm done letting it consume me, which I have chills again because right. he's such a badass and he's wise, and it sets up Black Panther the movie even better.
Right.
If we have this first, it makes Black Panther better.
Totally.
And then when he grabs the gun and says, the living are not done with you yet.
Man.
It's just, it's such a perfect setup. They're in the other room fighting to the death now at this point, right?
Right.
And then he's over here realizing this was his plan and fear. This is the catastrophe Vision was talking about all along. It all just kind of comes to a head in 20 minutes in a perfect way. And I want to segue off that and say, we haven't talked about Zemo yet. And I know people have some concerns, like not concerns, but they're jokes about how much Zemo would have to do to pull this off. Okay. And I'm here to defend him. I know that you've sometimes been in that camp. I know that a little bit his plot can be far-fetched. Oh, I also got to, okay, side note. The writing of his character is genius.
Uh-huh.
He is acting it perfectly to me. Such a cool, like shark-faced looking like deadpan villain, but still having this emotional sad core. And the genius of his character to me is that you didn't give us a villain that can fight the Avengers. I love that. I love the idea that everybody has tried.
Right.
More powerful men than him. Nobody can do it. So what's a way to tear him apart? This is a way to tear him apart. That to me is genius.
Right.
And the fact that at the end of it, he's going to kill himself anyways. It's just about taking people down while he goes down.
And having that moment to just watch the Avengers tear themselves apart.
I guess I would say that, like, first of all of those things I just said far, 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 far outweigh any concerns about is the plot a little ridiculous for him specifically.
Right.
Secondly, I just don't think it's that ridiculous. Basically, what we're led to believe is that he lost his family, right?
Uh-huh.
But he had to frame Bucky in a big way.
Right.
At the Accords, to know that the world's going to be stirred about it, and then that he could get in that facility, trigger Bucky again, just he's just kind of fanning the flame. You know what I'm saying? That's all he has to do is keep fanning the flame to where Tony's going to say, we have to bring in Bucky, and Cap's going to say, I can't bring in Bucky. We have to defend each other. And it shows throughout the whole movie, he's trying to track down that tape.
Right.
So I just don't think it's that far-fetched.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think when you think about it as basically he's just trying to get that tape, when you think about it in that way, it's not that far-fetched and it makes sense. I think what complicates it is the fact that he happens to be doing this at the exact same time that the Sokovia Accords are coming about is what makes it feel like a little...
It's possible that he's sensing, though, that this trouble is rising. Like, he may have saw the news with Lagos and be like, this is going to happen eventually. All he had to do is fan the flame. It's not like he had to have a crazy master plan. He just had to keep fanning the flame. That's my point.
That's true.
And I don't think that's that complicated to do.
No, I think that's
fair. If he has a read on what's happening.
It felt a lot more linear this time. I think there are stages of watching this movie, and I'm curious to see if you agree. I think the first time you see this movie, you're just wowed by how amazing it is.
Yes.
And so yep. you don't really read into all of that stuff. I think on like a second or third watch, you realize, wow, like there's a lot going on, like maybe too much going on. And then I think on like a later watch, you realize that it actually all works if you, but you just have to pay attention to everything and see that like it actually does work. Like I think on like those middle watches, you can get this vague sense that like there is like, it's maybe overstuffed, but then I think you realize that the way everything is connected is so well done and so nuanced that right. it's actually really, it's pretty smooth, all things considered.
Dude, 100% agree. If I was to graph my, let's say, 5 rewatches of this movie, right? The first time I would have put it at a 10 out of 10. Then the second time, 9 out of 10. Third time, 8 out of 10. There was concerns rising. Then like Infinity War came out and I realized the impact of it and it slightly moved up. Now, in hindsight of all of it, after doing this podcast, this watch was as good as I've ever had. So it's like I kind of like dipped all the way back down and worked all the way back up. Not all the way down, by the way. It never was lower than 90% in my brain, but, I've worked my way back up towards a top 5 movie now.
Yeah, that's the exact arc that I've had, though.
Yeah, totally. Okay. I just have to also give a shout out that I do really like the music here. I love the main theme. It's, again, when Henry Jackman does it, it's a totally different vibe than a lot of the other movies. It's not very, like, thematic or anthemic.
Uh-huh.
But I think it suits the emotion of the film, like, flawlessly. More than Winter Soldier for me.
And I actually think that what he does here feels like a better blend of the modern and the classic, like Silvestri,
it's like
Cap
right
one
in between.
Score than Winter Soldier. Yeah, yeah, which I
the
like.
The main theme is more Silvestri's feeling, definitely, than like the spy feel of
Kyle,
Winter Soldier.
That's what I said. I wrote down it almost foreshadows parts of Silvestri's Infinity War themes, like the kind of like huge, sweeping, tragic main theme.
It's almost like when you're putting together the playlist, which is on Spotify, by the way, Journey Through the MCU, you can find it. When you're putting together there's not a song from this movie that you'd be like, oh, that one's got to go on there, right? As far as the theme.
Right.
But how it fits the entire soundtrack, the context of the movie, is excellent to me.
Yeah.
Last minor things, and then I'm done. The Raft prison, I've never heard them call it the Raft. And is that a shout out in the Spider-Man game then? In the Spider-Man video game, the Raft prison, is that a thing from the comics? Because that blew my mind.
It is a thing from the comics. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I didn't know that, but I love it in the video game and I love it here.
Yeah.
And like you said, I never caught that shot of Tony looking up at the Avengers logo until this time and feeling sad.
Yeah.
And then I finally found the Joe Russo cameo this time. Did you see it?
The doctor.
Yes.
Or
some
the
of our listeners actually pointed that out to us.
True.
I found it.
Yeah.
Last thing, I'm going to shut up and you finish. just the shot of Steve laying down the shield is so symbolic. I think that's the ending of Captain America, quote unquote. Like when he says, you don't deserve that shield. My father made it. It's not yours. It doesn't belong to you. And he sets it down and totally acknowledges what he's saying. That's boom. We no longer call him Captain America. He is now Steve Rogers.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying, though?
Wow, like, Kyle.
Yeah, but
you're blowing
my
mind right here.
Well, you're going to see like black suited Captain, bearded Cap.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He never really has that shield again until Endgame. Like that is him like laying down, passing the torch that, you know what? Like he said to Tony, the Avengers are almost more your family than mine. And this is like the culmination of, you're right. He's not like justified to be the leader either, but I'm going to lay it down and go with Bucky, you know?
Man, that's so true. And something I definitely want us to talk about before we finish this rewatch is each of the main three movie arc. And that'll be complicated now because there's another Thor movie coming out. But as they stand, I do think each one kind of finishes off like the arc that began in their first introductory film. And I was going to say maybe the exception would be this movie, but you're making me think, yeah, it's like, if you look at Cap starting as like the quintessential American soldier that's kind of fighting for the cause and then see it ending with him dropping that shield that Howard gives him in the first movie in front of Howard's son. Gosh, like that's such, you're right, because he's ending as an outlaw. Like he's ending as the opposite of whatever he was when he started.
I mean, one step further, he's never the same again. If you remember, like, first of all, his dialogue even changes going forward from now on. He doesn't chime in as much. He's not trying to offer opinion on what they should do. He goes on and does like the Secret Avengers type stuff. I mean, you'll see it now going forward. This is the ending of Captain America. Not the ending of Steve Rogers, but he's done as Captain America.
I'm loving that. And it gives some insight into kind of some of the funny lines that we'll get from Cap in Endgame, kind of without spoilers, like when he's reflecting on his own past self, when it's like, you know, he's looking back and realizing how naive he was in the past. Yes. Like, it's like, you're right. Like after this break, it's like he does get this dose of reality.
I want you to listen to his dialogue from now on too. Just listen to the tone and how he talks going forward. When he shows back up he shows up to Director Ross, you know, in Infinity War, listen to how he talks to him and how he talks in general. It's awesome. It's genius.
What a wise man you are, Kyle.
I don't think it's that genius. I've always loved that about this movie personally.
I've never thought about it that way, but one experiment I want to have in general is just kind of watching these as like individual arcs, you know, just because I love little things like that, thinking of them not just in the MCU, but as their own character things. And you're hammering something in there.
That also helps with the implications feeling more serious, you know, the ramifications, because that's just another layer to it that in hindsight you appreciate more the damage this did. It permanently changes Tony and Cap for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Here's the thing. It's just so good. I know we just talked about it for a million hours, and I've watched this movie so many times. This is like my scene, Robbie. You've known that. I know that.
Yeah,
it hasn't changed for me. I love it. I know that it's dipped a little bit, but in general, this is my favorite kind of superhero movie. Like you said about that critic in the beginning, that's my scene.
Yeah, I mean, it remains one of the most critically well-received movies, and I think that that's well-deserved.
No doubt. Okay. So this is a big moment for me. I'm going to rank this. As you can tell, I love this. I've always loved it. I agree with your assessment that those middle few watches, I started to question a couple things, but it almost was like the movie was smarter than me. And the more I've watched it, the more I've actually gotten from it and gone back up from that. I think the acting is incredible. I think the emotion is there. I think there's some humor still to keep it interesting. I think the directing is great. The dialogue is flawless. All the stuff leading up to it is perfect. Like we said, I love it. So for me, this movie is a 95%, and I have it fifth of 23. At one point, I had this movie first overall, and I still think it's that good. Like, if you said this was your favorite movie, I'd be like, amen, brother. But I've had those questions of, could they have increased the stakes even more? And so I'm just going to slide it down a pinch, but it's fifth still overall, 95%. Like, I'm above the Rotten Tomatoes score, which is 91%, I think. So
yeah.
I love it.
Man, top five. I don't think I realized that, but it makes sense because it used to be your number one.
Yeah, for me personally, it's not debatable. Like I said, as long as you're in tier one, you can debate with me. But for me, this has always been one of my favorites ever.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's hard to argue there. And I'm with you. Like, once you get up high, it's hard to... it just gets hard. We've talked about this over and over again. So I have this ranked... It went up a bit for me this time. On this watch, I have this at a 92, so still a bit higher than Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
But for me, that puts it at a 9.
Wow, I'm not saying you're wrong, but that is a pretty big disparity. Like, I would say this is like a top movie, like 3 through 5. And again, if I can count Infinity War and Endgame as one, then we're like really close to the top of all films. Whereas you're kind of at the bottom of tier one, which is still tier one, but you're towards the bottom of it.
Yeah, it's hard because, and you know, again, some of these things move, but like on this, it was originally number 11 for me, but on this last rewatch, it hopped over Iron Man and the Avengers.
Robbie, then that's just the right decision. It's a better movie than those two movies. It is.
But it's hard because those two movies are both so great and so classic. And it's like, it's always hard to separate. Movies,
but
you know?
It's better. I know. It's just better.
Yeah.
I also want to add that on this watch, it hit me like the Captain America trilogy is by far the best trilogy.
I totally agree.
And it's
totally
not even agree. It's not even close. Because I have Captain America 1 low, you have it high, but 2 and 3 are in my top 10. And yeah. It's debatable that I'm too low on 1. Meaning, like, if you put Captain America 1 in the 80s and 2 and 3 both in the 90s, no one would argue. And no other trilogy comes close to that.
Right. And some people have Cap 1 ranked even higher than I do, you know, like when I've looked on the list. So it's like...
And some have it lower than you do.
Some, like you. But I will say... yeah, like the Iron Man trilogy starts off really well and it's kind of uneven from there. The Thor trilogy starts off pretty badly but ends on just an incredibly high note. And yeah, Cap is pretty good all the way, but getting kind of better as it goes. Although one thing I've struggled with is like I still have Winter Soldier ranked above Civil War. I don't know where you stand on that.
Winter Soldier is below for me. Winter Soldier is... sixth, so the one movie below. I got 5 and 6 right now.
Okay. Okay.
For me, that's almost strictly because of the ensemble type feel, which you know I'm biased towards, you know?
Right. And I could see that shifting for me even because the one thing about Winter Soldier that I always miss is that there's a little bit of the fun superhero-y ensemble thing that's not there, which is obviously there in Civil War. And so I could see that shifting. So my Civil War might make it all the way up to number 8 here. But there are a few other movies. Actually, every movie that's above Civil War right now, for me, with the exception of Guardians and Winter Soldier, is a movie that we haven't seen yet. So wow, I'm curious to see how that shifts some as we finish out the rewatch.
Okay, so Robbie, this was so monumental for me. I've lost my voice. I've shouted at our audience for an hour. And now I'm sitting here thinking, oh my goodness, what's next? Like, I put so much energy into this. I'm trying to think, what's next for me?
I'm so glad you asked, Kyle, because now we get to follow up with all these new characters that we've just met, and we get to start to see what this world is going to look like after Civil War. Both of those things excite me a lot. We're going to start with Black Panther next, which is one of the all-time greats, in my opinion. Then we go on to Spider-Man Homecoming, which is another one of the all-time greats, in my opinion. And then we get to Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is also a pretty good movie.
Which is fun. It's fine.
And then we get to see what's going on with Thor and Hulk. Do you know, Kyle? I don't know. We better go and check in on them with Thor Ragnarok.
We're going through a stretch of like the final five are in the top 10 almost.
Oh my gosh. And then, of course, we'll be finally at Infinity War and Endgame. But one thing I do want to say kind of here as we're looking forward to this period after Civil War is, you know, the last time that we saw Black Widow in this movie is that scene where Natasha and Tony are talking, and the last thing he says is, you know, T'Challa told Ross what you did, so they're coming for you. And she says something like, you know, I'm not the one that needs to watch my back, and then she leaves. And we don't know anything else about what happens with Natasha between then and Infinity War, but we're about to find out, Kyle.
She's not the one that has to watch her back. Maybe we'll find out.
I know. I mean, word on the street is, you know, there's the RDJ cameo, so I am really, especially after this rewatch, really excited to see where Black Widow picks up and kind of how it plays into Civil War stuff. So there's just, from here on, in virtually every way, we have just so much fun stuff to look forward to. And with these movies, with the podcast, it's going to be a good season.
Oh, guys, we've gotten emails from you with the kindest words, and that makes our hearts so happy. Thank you for that. We've gotten messages on Twitter and on Instagram, and we love all of that. So that's from me. Before Robbie wraps up, I wanted to say thanks to all of you, and we truly enjoy doing this.
No, we are super grateful and super lucky. This has been a blast for us, and it makes us so happy that you guys seem to be enjoying it. We love when we get stuff like that. We love talking with you. A lot of times you guys spot things that we don't. And so not only, you know, you've said that we enhance the MCU for you, but all of you guys enhance it for us as well. So in every way, we are grateful. We're really excited for what's to come. As always, if you have any thoughts on Civil War, if you have any thoughts on anything about the MCU, you can reach us on all the social media platforms at the FFW Podcast. As we said last week, we also now have a brand new website, which is the ffwpodcast.com. You can reach us there through the contact page. You can also find out a little bit more about us, listen through all the episodes, see where we are in the rewatch. Go check out the site. There's a lot there for you.
All right, so make sure you go and watch Black Panther so that we can talk about it this same time next week. And we'll see you on Friends from Work.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.